the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 78, recorded Friday, February 15th, 2013. Lights, lights, baby.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing. Scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audio-visual information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host, your tour guide, your hapless captain of this stalled cruise ship. With us this week is Matt Scott. He's from Omega Audio Video in London, Ontario, Canada. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine. And holy cow, he's back from training and whatever
no
else.
No way!
Yeah, it is.
In the flesh.
It's a rare sighting. His name is Michael Drainer. He used to work for somebody else, but now he is the, ready? Midwest Area Sales Manager Installed Sound for Sennheiser. How are you, brother?
Doing very well. It's good to be back, folks.
And just in case...
Jumping jacks, Batman. It's
just
really him.
In case his boss is listening, he's actually talking into a Sennheiser microphone, so...
I have with me today the Sennheiser MK4 recording microphone.
And no, they didn't pay for that. So, this week we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Apparently, Microsoft forgot to make enough services to go around Ethernet. Celebrated its 40th birthday, and that's close to somebody else in this room's birthday. You know, Michael's almost 40.
Not
so.
I. not I.
Yeah. Definitely not me.
Well, yeah, then I guess that leaves me. Vanilla Ice has a lighting line, and I'm talking about that because Matt Scott's the smartest lighting guy I know. And then my friends over at the BBC have totally broken my heart with Doctor Who, and I'll explain that in a second. But first, an article out of the Times of India. Is this Steve Jobs' worst nightmare coming true? And basically, the bottom line is this. Is Samsung, over the last couple of years, with the help of Android, it has to be said, with the help of Android, is quickly becoming, in certain parts of the world, the number one smartphone. A reason that makes sense for AV is because, hey, guess what the easiest and the most ubiquitous audio-visual controller you have in your pocket is? That's right, your smartphone. So, Mr. Scott, is this something we need to be concerned about? Or should we bow to our new masters at Samsung and say, you know, welcome? And also, not for nothing, Samsung is one of the platinum sponsors of the Infocom show, now that our buddies in Anaheim have bowed out. So, is this a good thing, bad thing? You know, who cares who wins this fight?
I don't think anyone's going to actually win this fight. I think they're going to both they're going to brawl it out and just continue to be behemoths and both kind of own a large part of the share. Sorry to my local friends or him who will not be
don't
in this fight.
That's not even
may
fair.
May they rest in peace.
They're not, no. They're not dead yet.
I finally had one of my friends order the new phone. One friend. I feel kind of special.
If the 10 series doesn't pull them out, they're done.
Well, yeah,
it won't.
But so back to what we're talking about, yes. Michael. Just because you just showed up doesn't mean you get to talk.
Oh, he's got 6 months worth of pent-up, you know,
I know.
Commentary.
I noticed that, you know, some of our other friends bowed out of the show and you left it to me.
Thank you,
anyways,
George Tucker.
back to Samsung.
He's got a real job.
I know, tell me about it.
I think the biggest thing will come down to the fact that, you know, again, so many people have just solely developed for Apple, and Android has kind of been the afterthought. And I know Android is not Samsung, but most, you know, a fair amount of people who are on Android devices are using Samsungs. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where now you're going to have to develop for both at the same time. You're not going to be able to say, yes, our iOS app is coming this month, and in 2 months, we'll have our Android app. You're going to have to do them at the same time, and there will be a lot of companies who will push Android first. Oh, because again, you got to remember, it's not, yes, it's Samsung Apple, but the bigger thing is Samsung Android, right? Or, I'm sorry, Apple Android.
Apple Android, yeah.
And that's what's pushing it. I get into these little fights all the time. Every time I'm talking Apple with especially the local radio show that I commentate on quite often, because, you know, everyone wants to go, well, Apple's losing ground to Android. It's like, well, yeah, of course they are. Android has on the market right now, what is it? I don't know, maybe 30, 35 different phones at least.
But Matt, that's why I have to jump in here and disagree with you for a moment, because are they going to roll out Apple before Android? Are they going to roll them out together? I still think Apple is the leader. And the reason is because you do have 30 different devices you have to develop for. With Apple, I develop it once, I roll it out, and I'm good to go. But with the Android platform, you know, I got to worry about compatibility across 30 different.
Hang on.
You got to remember that one of the things that Android is pushing is, even though they've got multiple devices running it, they're pushing to have a, you know, complete, consistent deployment, so that what you run on your GS3 is the same as what you run on your GS4 versus your LG Optimus or your Motorola whatever. Sorry, I don't know any Motorola phones. Yeah, it happens. But, you know, it is one of those things where, again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen tomorrow. I just, as Samsung continues to push this and Android continues to be developed that much faster and further than, not necessarily than iOS will, I think they'll continue to compete very, very well. But you'll start to see a lot of people, you know, really running Android devices, and most of those will probably be Samsung, just because they do make a really killer device.
Okay, really quickly, and this is where it ties back into the AV part. Whether it's Panasonic or Samsung or Sony or whatever, all of these guys have built-in apps now. I mean, I recently bought a new Pioneer Head. First thing I did was I went to the App Store and I downloaded their app for it. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but hey, you know what? It's there, and it's possible. They did not, though, have one for Android. They did on the iOS platform. Did it for the iPad, and I still can't do it with my phone. So here's the question, guys: is the fact that Android is so ubiquitous, and I think that it, regardless of the different flavors of it, we can agree that it's becoming more ubiquitous than possibly iOS. Does that mean that either Sony and Samsung and all these guys are going to bake Android into their smart devices like TVs and you know, distribution heads, or are they going to try to do their own version, their own stuff inside, and then create hooks into iOS and to Samsung and to Android?
Well, if they're smart, they'll, you know, use something like Android or, you know, set a standard. If they continue to be closed-minded like they have so much in the past, they'll keep it in their own little shoebox, their own little sandbox, and, you know, you'll end up with Sony products that don't talk to anything else and Samsung products that don't talk to anything but Samsung products. And, you know, you'll hit that point where people will not use those built-in features because they just don't function properly.
As we've seen. Hear, hear.
Because
I don't use the built-in stuff.
Yeah,
you know, I don't. I've got.
Oh, that's true.
And I've got Samsung player, DVD player. I've got Samsung TV. I got a Pioneer surround sound receiver. My DirecTV box and my Apple TV and my media server, which is running Apple Air.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's play. So you're still going to have the varying platforms until a standard's created, which, by the way, I don't believe there will be in this arena. So we're just speaking hypothetically then. So everything's going to stand on its own.
Yeah.
And it's really going to come down to market share. That's my perspective.
Okay, so here...
The only side that I see where they may make a standard that may be effective for this is if, you know, again, depending on how the development of HD...
Don't you say
comes.
CEC, don't you?
No. CEC is... complete and utter garbage. But, you know, again, that's one of the things that they're playing with as they're working on the development of HD-based T. And even they were talking about it at CES this year. Some of the stuff that they're working on, if it works the way that they want it to work and they're thinking the development's going to go, that may become part of that control and smart control side of things that we keep half expecting someone to bring out.
So let me ask you guys this, and Michael, we'll start with you on this. As being a former integrator, are all of these really cool, awesome, controllable devices that people are seeing now? Like I said, you know, I'm a tech geek, right? But if my in-laws go out and buy a new TV and they can download something on their phone, they think that's cool, right? Is this going to create a bigger market and a bigger brand or possibility awareness or technology awareness for people like Crestron, AMX, Control 4, where they say, you know what, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you have this device and this device and this device, and yes, they all have their own app. However, if you'd like to control all of them with one app, then enters, in walks, Kevin Iselli, and lays it all out for them.
If they're smart, yes,
they'll take it. They'll take advantage.
Absolutely, they should capitalize on that. You know, the AV industry is a good size industry, but it's nothing compared to the consumer electronics forum. And Crestron, for instance, AMX, they both have a good foothold, Control 4 in the residential space, but definitely higher end residential space. If they were to come out with a platform like that, then they're going to be competing with the likes of Logitech and the Harmony remotes and things along those lines, the URCs.
Forget it.
But, it's really about, and that's what integration is all about, right? It's bringing all the pieces together and making it work as one common system, no matter what the platform. So I say take everything to RS-232 and you're good.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
232. Yeah, you haven't. They haven't.
Well, we could bring Zigbee back.
Oh, be quiet! Oh,
please don't.
We could bring X10 back. So.
Hey.
All right, from our buddies.
I saw a customer last week who really wanted to know why he couldn't just use X10.
And what was your explanation, Mr. Scott?
Was really? Do you want your lights to turn on?
Okay, there you go. Speaking of lights,
our
friends over at CE Pro.
If you just
Pro,
want something in the wall that
I am
going to
get this story
signals.
Out. Our buddies over at CE Pro, Julie Jacobson wrote this piece. We're going to talk about lights for a second, and you Woo! Are a huge thing. Yeah, that's why I have you. That's why this it makes sense for to have you on for a couple of these. Lutron is
the dance over here,
huh? The happy dance.
The dance over here.
Lutron has two patents for controlling and programming IP-enabled dimmers and other devices via, quote-unquote, the Internet of Things.
Don't say it like that. Is that an actual thing?
No, that's what it says. It's a quote. I did not make this up. And God love the guys at Lutron, but what, I'm not going to make fun of them for the freaking Internet of Things thing.
They're not the first person to use that, actually.
Okay, besides
it is,
the senator.
It is an acronym now, IoT.
Yeah, it is, IoT.
Yep.
Seriously.
Thanks, Tim.
Seriously. All right. Internet of Things, lowercase o, capital T.
Trash in my Lutron piece.
That and the inner tubes, I'll accept both of them at the same time. and if you don't know what that is, go Google it. There's a wiki on it. Matt, is this kind of Lutron getting into the game and furthering their control over not just lights but also other things going IP and them just more developing things?
I don't think it is them trying to control other things so much as it's them continuing to expand and progress the lighting control market and the way in which the systems can function down the road. It's something where we've seen it really start to take off with stuff like Nest. In the Wi-Fi thermostats that, again, you plug it on the wall, or not even plug it, you screw it into the wall, put a battery in it, it connects, it does its thing, and you have access to it anywhere without the need for additional processors. Before we started recording, you and I were talking about some Crestron parts that I have in my house right now. My Crestron thermostat that I'm currently using, it requires not only a processor, but also an additional RF dongle to allow it to function on the network and have control over it. With even all my Lutron stuff that's in my house currently, it still needs that additional box. What this is going to give us the possibility and the capability of down the road will be having instant control of that without the box and without some of those additional things that you needed to actually, get that control beyond the system. And I think it's just it's something we've seen some people try this with a couple of things down the road in the past, And it's kind of starting to get there. But now that Lutron has obviously patented this back in June, this will really, you know, again, it's Lutron. If they're going to make it, they're going to make it work. It may take them some time to do it, but they'll do it, and it'll work, and it'll be functional. And, you know, again, I was working with a client 2 weeks ago looking at some stuff, and, you know, he was looking at the project and going, yeah, the scope of this is a little bit more than what I expected. I just want to do this. And, you know, this is one of those products that when this comes to market, again, depending on all those things that'll happen when it comes to market, it can, you know, it to me as a big current dealer, it makes me look at it and go, man, this is going to make it so much more accessible for so many people.
And Michael, the reason I even bring this up is the fact that it is Lutron, right? This is not some guy in the back 40 selling light switches out of his car. It's an industry leader who is pushing more and more into IP, and not just IP, but wireless IP control.
Yeah, I think it's the natural progression, and Lutron's just the first to the market to say, hey, we're going to patent this. Now, that's not to negate their innovation, because they're known as a very innovative company, and I commend them for that. But I am excited about this. You know, my wife has a Fitbit. For those,
what has it?
A Fitbit. Okay. And I bring that up.
Is there a cream for that?
Wow. A Fit.
Wow. No. Okay. Go back to CE Pro.
Yes.
Okay. Julie Jacobson actually wrote an article about this, about the Fitbit.
Okay.
About the Fitbit and the Internet of Things and how it spoils food if you don't exercise.
Okay.
Okay. So the Fitbit is this cool little device. It's kind of like a pedometer, a fancy pedometer. You strap it on and it tracks every step you take, stairs, all your activities, and gives you all the calories. But then it communicates back to your home computer, whether it's a Mac, PC, doesn't matter, via Bluetooth. I don't have to sync it up. As long as I'm in range, it's going to upload the information, syncs my iPad app. But the thing that Julie was talking about here is, hey, if you don't exercise enough, the Fitbit is going to log that information, and you can use the Internet of Things and all the intelligence built into that to actually tell your refrigerator to turn off so you get punished for not exercising.
I don't like that at all.
I know. So I know that sounds really far-fetched, but actually, I think it's Belkin that came out with the interface, the Belkin Wemo switch,
okay,
which does all this. And, you know, so yes, is this technology cool, but is it scary? Heck yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, it's the Matrix all over again, or the start of the Matrix. So
yeah, it's the natural progression. Kudos to Lutron for going after it, being the first to hit the market with it, for securing the patents, and everybody else is going to have to license the technology from them now.
Yeah.
So.
And Matt will be happy for another couple of years. So.
Oh my gosh, I'll love it.
Yeah. The AV Network.
I can't wait.
From AV Network.
I already called my rep.
And he said, and he said, you're shipping next week.
No, actually, he pretty much said exactly what Mark, their patent attorney, said, and said, yes, we don't discuss upcoming products. I said, come on, man.
There's an article. Talk to me about it.
He goes, yeah, what you read, that's what we
got. That's what we got.
There you go. Wait for my next tour.
From the PMA reports, says that the projector market hit 9.5 million in 2012, guys. And something that is near and dear to my heart when it comes to education, that's pretty much where we live, right? Education is, I think, education and government are probably the two biggest market consumers of projectors. It's a slight increase over 2011, and the reason that we're bringing this up is because you've got things that I think are encroaching on the projector market, namely thin LED flat panels that you can get up to 90 inches now. In the world of education, the 110-inch diagonal screen is kind of a standard. I hate to say standard. It's kind of a median. How about that? That's one of the things that you would kind of throw up. And you're getting flat panels now that are about that size. So, Michael, is this slight increase a harbinger of the projector market going down, or was it just a blip and they're just going to keep growing and growing?
Man, you know, that's a hard one to tell. I'm with you, though, in the average size of education displays. And when I say display, I mean projector or actual display. until the LEDs reach the point that you're at that 100, 110 inch mark, I think you're still going to see projectors remain flat, if not continue to grow. Once the displays reach the point that you're able to get beyond that 100, 110 inch economically, then you're going to start to see the transition.
Matt, he makes a good point because, you know, let's be honest, the 90 inch sharp is somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 to $3,000, and I can get a projector and screen that does bigger, that does the 100, 110 inch for not about in, seven and a quarter, eight and a quarter. So
not in Canada.
Well,
sorry.
I'll buy one for you and then just charge you a slight upcharge.
What? I like it. Sorry.
Because even with my upcharge, you'd still be saving money.
Oh yeah.
So huge. are we looking at the start of the downturn for projectors, or are they still going to keep marching on?
I still don't think we are, because, you know, yes, the large screens are becoming occasionally a replacement. Where I see them being replaced more often than education is in the boardroom. I see them going into a lot of corporate applications.
Agreed.
More so than education, because again, how often do you really go into a classroom that's going to seat less than 20 kids or adults or whatever, you know, level you're at, where you're actually going to make use of only a 90 or even only 110? Most of those, especially when they're either renovating or updating current facilities, they're going bigger. They're going with larger screens so that more students can, you know, see it better. They're not sticking with an 85-inch projection screen. They're updating the whole thing. The other side that we got to remember is, as well, is that there's still a ton of those, you know, 10-year-old, rooms where the current projector just isn't cutting it anymore, and they're going to have to upgrade, and they're not going to be looking at the flat panel and all the changes that go with putting a flat panel in instead of just replacing the one unit in the ceiling.
That's valid.
And honestly, that's why, you know, looking back to my integration days, we still sold a lot of VGA. And even today,
bite your tongue.
I'm not kidding, man. You still see a lot of HD15 devices going into the ceilings because it's just that. It's drop one out, put a new one, higher output in, and make it work. Get by. That's what you see in a lot of education.
Do you not listen to this show anymore?
Nope.
Last week's show was called VGA is Dead. There. Yep. End of sentence.
Yep. You were wrong.
Oh.
Even though the show title was that, and even though I personally agree with you on that, I still spec'd a VGA cable system going into one the day before.
It is still very prevalent. It is not dead yet. I should have been on last week's show. I'm just saying.
Even though it's not coming out on every new product and it's not been in laptops on new panels from Intel for almost a year now,
right,
it's still something where every, you know, facilities manager, every technical director, every, like, for heaven's sakes, every church tech person I talk to tells me that they have someone who brings in a USB or a computer with a VGA output.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, you know, we're still running HDMI. We're still giving them a breakout box so that if they, you know, if it's something where they're not thinking that they want VGA in the wall, we're still giving them the capability to do it, whether it's over a ballon or, you know, again, a breakout box to HDMI or something. We're still doing it because people still think they need it.
So the consensus is that although VGA is not dead, it should be.
Yes, it should be.
Well, even if it is dead, it's still going to come back and say, well, I'm not dead yet.
It's going to haunt you. It's going to be the zombie.
I feel like
that's it. It's
run.
A walking dead.
It's a walking dead. That's exactly right.
VGA is walking dead. All right.
Nice.
You're listening to AV Week. That right there across the table from me is Michael Drainer from Sennheiser Installed Sound. And on the Skype box machine is my Canadian buddy, Matt Scott from Omega Audio Video. The Surface sold out this week, Matt. Do we care? And is it? Do you think maybe it was a Nintendo trick? And if you don't know what that is, basically where they don't make enough, and so they artificially sell out online.
I tell you what, it's looking really good for their stock price that they, air quotes, sold out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me, just like the BlackBerry we were talking about earlier. I don't know about you guys. I have yet to see one in the field. I have not seen a single Surface outside of a Best Buy store. Yeah.
Agreed.
Anywhere. I haven't talked to someone who bought one. I haven't talked to someone who wants one. And it's, you know, yeah, they've sold out, but they're also not, you know, ramping production of the Surfaces or the Surface Pros the way that Apple ramps production on an iPad that comes out. They're, you know, they don't know what their market spec's going to be. Look at what HP has done in the last couple of years with their tablets and, you know, whatever devices where they expected them to sell. Look at the Playbook.
Oh, geez.
They barely sold any of them. So, yeah, Microsoft's not looking at it going, you know what, let's order, you know, 50 million. I don't know how many they ordered. I don't know how many they've officially sold. But they're not going to be, you know, ordering Apple numbers right off the bat. So, yeah, have they sold out? Sure. Does it mean that they underestimated or that they, you know, at least didn't overestimate? Who knows? We, you know, until they actually bring some sales data out that's not just, hey, we're sold out, who knows if this actually means anything?
Michael, is it a fake sellout, or is it, you know, the demand really that high?
What's a Surface?
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's the one with the really cool commercial where they do.
Oh, that's right, with the little clicking thing. Yeah, the clicking. Yes, oh, I always wanted to do that. I saw the little Microsoft kiosk at the mall, and I wanted to go ask them to do the clicky dance for me.
Why didn't you?
That'd be awesome if they did that at every store.
Yes.
They could do live performances. Think how many people they get in their stores.
But look at the pricing of this thing, dude. I mean, $999, right? Ridiculous. Why the heck wouldn't I buy an iPad over that?
Well, the funny thing is that was the big thing that so many people trashed iPads for, was that they were still expensive.
Right. So obviously somebody didn't do their research on positioning this thing to the market.
Well, yeah, again,
because they're more expensive than iPads.
Right.
Who is their market, though?
I don't know. Do you?
Well, that's a little unfair because the market is the same people. I think their market is the same person who would buy an iPad, right?
No. I'm not.
I don't know that that's the case, though.
You think?
I don't know.
It like that. I'm just saying when you look at, you know, what it's capable, especially the Pro Edition, who is that supposed to go to? Is that supposed to go to me?
See, here's the thing. I think I
don't know.
I honestly think that the Pro, and you put Pro on there for a reason. It's talking to IT groups inside Fortune 500 companies and institutions of higher learning who they love Microsoft, right? They love their servers. They love this, that, and the other. Oh, you're going to give me a tablet because all these Yahoo kids and all these vice presidents are bringing in their iPads, and I can't put this on my network. But Microsoft, the name I love and trust and have been courting for 20 years,
I don't
they're
know
gonna
if there's
give me
a
one.
Single tech.
I don't know.
He says Microsoft, the name I know and trust.
Yeah, you just use contradictory statements in the same sentence, my friend.
Never mind.
Sorry, I know that was a wonderful speech that you've prepared and been working on and rewritten multiple times.
Oh, and he was very passionate about it. You should have seen him.
I know he was standing up. He was pacing a little bit. Yes. I know. Luckily, the teleprompter didn't fail.
Sweating a little bit.
I apologize. I cut in there, but. Man, I just
never mind that. See, and that's that. But as an AV guy, that's my perception of IT guys is that they love Microsoft. They're going to love something from Microsoft called the Surface Pro because it has Pro in the title,
and they can
distribute this out and it can be enterprise and they can love everything.
Yeah, but why? Okay, so let's look at how the iPad and the iPhone have gained such great adoption in the corporate place.
By sheer willpower and numbers.
Exactly. Okay. And that's part of it. And who brought it in? It wasn't the IT people.
No. They fought it.
Exactly. But it's still winning. And it's continuing to win every day. And more companies are learning that the BYOD approach, and for those who don't know, that's bring your own device. You know, they fought it for years, but now they're learning to embrace it. It's one less thing that they have to be concerned about. They don't have to maintain it. All they have to do is deal with the policies and how to secure it in their network.
That's okay. Right.
So it's up to the individuals. I have a company issued iPad now. Now, this is the first company I've worked for that's done that, but they've learned to embrace the technology. They've learned to control it within their environment, and it's working really well for us. And you're seeing more and more of that. And I think we've had those conversations in the past that the consumer market drives the pro market.
It does.
It's not the other way around. No. And so consumer demand is going to drive what corporations are going to adopt in the long term.
Absolutely. All right. This comes to us from the Register, register.co.uk. The Ethernet is 40.
It's as old as Tim Albright,
it's
folks.
As old as me. And it's as old as Michael and Matt put together. So,
aw, that's sweet. He said, "I'm young."
You punk kids.
Well, actually, he was saying that. Never mind. You're right, I was saying
that Matt was really, really young.
Matt's still the only one under 30, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah. Just.
He is
indeed.
Just.
Well, no, not just. Like, actually, like 10 months. Just.
Regardless, oh, 10 you're months. Still yes. under 30. So anyhow, so the Ethernet is 40 years old. Here in about next week or so, Infocom is going to release a show that our buddy George Tucker did, a version of or an episode of Infocom Today about networked AV. The Ethernet is 40, and the AV industry is just now in the last few years embracing it in totality. I mean, let's be honest here. We
you don't want to jump on anything. You know, take your time.
Well, not just that. And what was it? 10, 12 years ago, we had our first AV device that had Ethernet. So I'm not saying we just now got to the table, okay? We waited 30 years, and then we got to the table.
We're just late bloomers.
Okay. Michael, is it besides the fact that it's 40 years old, are we getting to – is there something coming else down the pike, or is this what we've got for the next foreseeable future – and so it makes sense for AV to embrace this completely.
One of the things that the IT industry is very good at is standards. And that is something that we are horrible at in the AV industry. Okay. Now, that said, that's why Ethernet has lasted 40 years. You know, it was up against competitors like Token Ring and Fitty and some other things like that.
Is that a relation to Fitbit?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But Ethernet won out at the end of the day. And it was the standard that was adopted worldwide by the IT community. And I think it's going to continue to be the standard for the foreseeable future. We come out with newer and better and faster and improved versions of Ethernet. But until something comes out that just completely revolutionizes the format, we're gonna stay on this platform for a while. Now, that said, Wi-Fi, obviously... Mm-hmm. A big deal, and that's going to continue to progress. And
but you still need wires to get to the...
Exactly. That's exactly right. And remember, Ethernet is a platform. It's, you know, it's a communication medium.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so not the Cat 5 that
it's
I...
It's not the cable. Yeah. Right.
Matt, is this, like Michael says, this is going to be here for a while?
Yes.
Yes. You know what?
Just say you concur.
A broadcast teacher at one point told me not to ask yes and no questions, and that's probably why.
Yeah, that's because you get someone like me who says,
yes.
I agree. Yes.
I concur.
All right, next story.
Let's talk about Sennheiser for a couple minutes and a couple different ones that our friend, Mr. Michael Drainer from Sennheiser, has brought us. First of all, it's called an Anaconda.
Dum-dum-dum.
It looks like an Anaconda. It's a freaking speaker that you can... flexible?
It is 2 meters long.
It's a freaking snake.
It is a flexible line array.
Jeez.
Say what?
It is the coolest thing since sliced bread, let me tell you.
Oh, wow.
See, I don't remember before sliced bread, so that means nothing to me.
Okay, I do. And let me tell you, I can't tell you how many times I cut my fingers slicing bread. So,
imagine a snake, a black snake, that is 2 meters long.
You
that
twist has, it in one of these
that
pictures.
Has NL4 connectors on both ends, and I can connect multiple numbers of them together in a long element, up to 16 elements in one line, and I could stretch it around a room. I can conform in historical spaces.
That's freaking cool.
You could wear it. If you had an amplifier that would drive it, wear it around your neck.
I would do that.
Matt Scott would do that.
Hey, can you send me one of
this thing? Belt? This thing
do
is
I
revolutionary.
Look like Flavor Flav?
It's revolutionary, dude.
Can I size it as a belt?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
I know.
For your 2 meter waist,
it's
yes.
2 meters.
No, I don't have. To.
I could wear it as a belt. Can you couldn't. I could wear it as a belt. You probably not.
I need it as a 36.
And. It's IP55 rated for outdoor use.
See, that's just cool.
Landscaping, under eaves and overhangs.
Now, let me ask you this, in all seriousness, because I'm not an audio guy. You are my audio brain when it comes to stuff.
You give me too much credit.
Even before you started at Sennheiser. In the picture, you show it being twisted and turned and almost mm-hmm. made into knots. Does that affect the sound quality? Does it affect the... Because you've shown me ease drawings before, and I barely understood them. Does that affect stuff like that, like the sound displacement or the sound?
Yeah, absolutely it does. So basically, this device is made up of a number of little one-inch drivers throughout.
Are they steerable? Or I guess they are steerable because you can flex
it. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, because you can turn it and flex it and change its orientation. But yes, as you turn it, it is going to change the dispersion of it. It will change the frequency response a little bit. But keep in mind that this is something that's designed for very unique applications. You could put it across a stage lip, right, where you cannot have obtrusive speakers. You can't put anything into the front of the stage. Work really great for front fills. Under balconies where you have a low overhang mm-hmm. and you can't have speakers hanging down and you don't want the honky ceiling drain ceiling speakers up there, or you don't get access to it. I mean, this is something that you can literally strap up to a rafter, connect it end to end, and it's going to work. I've got a number of clients that are very excited about this product for historical type applications.
And that
minimal impact into the space, because you can customize the colors of it. You basically throw a sock over it, whatever color sock you want. And think about like the whirlwind snakeskin.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the braid. That's what this is constructed of. And then inside of it are the individual line array elements.
That's exactly what it looks like, is that whirlwind. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So here's my question. What's the pricing on it?
Have they
announced it?
I don't have pricing on it yet, unfortunately. I will have my demo units middle of March is when I believe they're supposed to arrive from Italy.
So and then Michael's going to kind of make a trip up to London, Ontario.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because technically that's the Midwest. Do you do Michigan? You don't do Michigan, do you?
I don't do Michigan, unfortunately. No, I sure don't. Trying to think of what else to tell you about. Yeah, you know, think front fills, outdoor installations, theme parks, scenography design, you know, anything along those lines. Exhibits are a big deal.
All right. Well, the other thing is the Grammys were last week, and you guys had a press release out about the number of Sennheisers being used. Miranda Lambert used one, Alicia Keys, LL Cool J used one.
Yep.
I just think that's cool.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you as the Sennheiser representative. Is that a big deal for you guys? I mean, do you guys think you get a lot of bang for your buck when it comes to having Sennheiser all over the Grammys?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And here's one of the important things to know, too. We don't give product away.
So they didn't.
When you see artists using our product, they buy it.
Really?
Yes. Now, there are a lot of competitors out there who will comp the artist or give them the product or sponsor them by, you know, loading them up with free gear. We don't do that. People that use our products use them because they honestly believe they're the best in the business.
So,
and they're willing to pay for them.
A couple of years ago, American Idol, who was no stranger to sponsored things.
Nope.
I mean, for granted, they've had Coke cups on their tables for 6 years or seven. How long the thing? Yeah. They started using the fancy smancy Sennheisers. With the tips at the end,
the fin,
yes,
the infamous fin.
So they didn't. That wasn't a sponsorship deal. No. Sennheiser didn't call up and say, "Hey, would you like to use our mics?" They purchased all of those.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir. And in fact, something else you didn't know is that they used Neumann elements, which are also owned by Sennheiser, for the judges and the judges' mics on the tables.
Well, that's pretty.
Which is pretty cool.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm in the wrong business, or the wrong end of this business.
Yep.
That'd be cool. I want a Neumann. It's a whole other issue.
I told you, for the right price, I'll get you
one. I know that. I have to buy it. That's the problem. Jeez. And since I have no ads on this, then there, you know how much money I make off this game.
I know. Right. By the way, Tim is soliciting sponsorships.
No, I'm not.
I'm just kidding.
All right, let's continue on. There's a Bluetooth sticker that you can slap on stuff, and the reason I mentioned that.
Okay, that's one of the coolest things.
It is very cool. It's from The Verge, by the way. We'll put the link up. Matt, George has talked about this. Our buddy George Tucker, Tucker 2 is on Twitter, by the way. not that he doesn't have enough followers, but he's talked about before about all of these this RF stuff and not being a gesture in kind of in jest, but the control systems that are coming out now and the interactivity with them, especially with stuff like occupancy sensors and Bluetooth, this is something I see that you can, you know, either put it on a keychain or whatever, and you walk in the door, and your Bluetooth button that's on your keychain senses that you're home and says, "Hey, look, Matt's home. Here's Matt's presets." And whether that it runs, whether it runs you a nice hot bath, or it starts the jazz music and sets the lights not nice and low and turns on a soccer game.
My lights are always nice and low before I even walk in the door.
Well, there you go.
That's besides,
the point. On one TV, it turns on Manchester United. On the other TV, it has, you know, the Cowboys from when they were good.
Ouch. This coming from a Bears fan. Wow.
Ouch. Yeah, that was better.
How about that?
Is this something that where we can integrate this stuff into an AV control system?
I don't know if it's yet to that point where we can integrate with it. The part of it that I loved is that I will pay just about anything to get one of these that I can put on my wife's phone. So every time we're about to leave the house and she goes, "Where's my phone?" I can open my phone and find it for her.
You and me both.
Good wow. Lord. I don't know how they lose them so quickly.
I thought I was the only one that had that problem, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That would be good. But no, it's...
Oh, can I put it on my son's pacifier?
It's surely going to get there.
Oh, for Pete. No, you just buy more pacifiers.
Can I put it on his binkies?
30 cents.
On his binkies?
Yeah, he loses his binkies all the time.
They're kids.
Dude,
they've
got the little clips. Haven't you seen
those?
They
do have clips.
They clip to the shirt and then the other side
goes
to the...
I've got a couple. I'll bring you a couple.
Continually attached to him? Maybe they don't.
Oh,
sell those
oh! Screens. Can I put him on it? There we go. That's
put
how
on
I,
him.
Put it on him.
Put it on him.
Yeah.
Well, you don't lose him.
No, you can find out where your kids
your
are.
And eventually, just sew it into their backside. And
well, yeah, you can. You can already.
When he's 18, you can open up your iPhone and go, "Oh, there he is." Oh Lord. All right. Well, a couple more stories, and we'll let you guys go. First of all, because it's you know, I have my smart lighting guy on. Vanilla Ice has a home lighting system. Sorry.
I knew this was coming. I got one good story, and then I get one cheesy.
All right, let's go. I mean, here's the thing. Besides the fact that, you know, he did Ice Ice Baby, and I probably danced to it during show choir when I was in high school.
Jeez.
Vanilla Ice has... As I've got pictures, I'll show you sometime.
Ooh, oh no, please fancy. Don't.
Hey, you know what? I looked good back then.
Uh-huh.
As compared to now.
Sure.
Well, Tim, you still look good.
Thank you very
you
much.
You own it, my friend.
Hey,
thank
you're not
you.
Looking at him across the table.
You're right.
I'm in Canada, so it's perfect.
It's the perfect distance for me to look good. Vanilla Ice is also
he's got lighting.
He's become a home renovator. I mean, he buys homes and he flips them.
And oh, did you hear his new song?
What?
Light, baby.
Oh.
How long have you been working on that, Michael?
About 30 seconds.
It sounds like it.
Since you got the email.
Since you got the email on Tuesday about that we're talking about this. But he has a lighting. It's called Vanilla Ice Lighting Line. And Matt, is this something as, you know, you do a lot of resi. Could you, all kidding aside, with a straight face, could you spec this and bring this to your clients?
Not if it looks like the light that's on the advertisement. No. Okay.
It looks kind of like old.
It's an ugly fixture.
Yeah.
It looks like crap. You know, it's like anything. Lighting is one of those things where there are so many manufacturers who make it. Capital makes a boatload of fixtures, and they have a fair number of endorsed lines by everyone and their mother who has, you know, a couple lamps that they – put their signature on it. Oh, we like this lamp. It looks like us or whatever. I don't know. I honestly do not know if there's really a customer who walks into a lighting store and says, "Do you have anything by Vanilla Ice?" Because if you do, I will buy that luminary fixture from you right now. Here's my Amex.
Yes, but did you see the price on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what?
$1,495 for that little chandelier.
He's going to eat.
Lighting is an expensive game.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, when you get out of – if you guys have never gotten outside of, like, the Home Depot local little lighting store and
have
not got into some of the boutique in the actual designer lighting fixture market, there's some very, very expensive stuff and some very, very sexy stuff. Unfortunately, this only kind of falls into the expensive part, not the sexy part. Again, it's a story because it's Vanilla Ice. People like to reminisce on either how far he's come or how far he's fallen, depending on whether you like him or not.
Yeah, but did you notice? I mean, I don't know if you dug into this, Matt, and looked at it all, but I'm looking at the entire line, and it's 8 fixtures that look exactly the same.
They're it's very minimal, and you know, when you read the reports on it, it's stuff that's coming. No, again, this is what they do in lighting. It's, you know, it's for, you know, looking at this first opening featured item right now, it's 3 fixtures. They look almost the same. One is a pewter, one's a bronze, one has a slightly smaller globe setting. It's lighting. That's what they do.
So we need to hook Vanilla Ice up with the Lutron folks to get his
they'll never let him
Internet of Things going on his new little light fixture. Then I might consider
Again, that's the next that could be one of the next steps in not for ice, but right. in lighting in general.
Right.
Is when they start to integrate actual fixtures.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, again, you may see some very, very cool stuff start to happen.
Well, and that makes sense because that's kind of the approach that that televisions and displays have taken, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, first of all, it was hooking up a Crestron or AMX or something like that via 232. Now, almost every projector out there with its SALT has some sort of wireless control and stuff built into it. So that makes sense.
Exactly. The hardest part of that is just that, you know, fixtures are, there's so many of them. It's not like projection or TV lines. Like if you order a Capital Lighting catalog, your mailman will hate you because it's huge. Like it is gigantic if you get their entire line. And it changes so often.
And by the way, Vanilla's products are on page, you know, 999.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, again, he's only got 6, or right. sorry, 9.
Nine products. 9 SKUs. 9 SKUs. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's worth 2 pages.
No, it's a big catalog. But, you know, again, there will be someone who likes his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it'll be the same as, gosh, what was I looking at the other day? It was something, and it was, I think it was in, like, one of the home stores. And it was Vera Wang. And I don't really like her stuff in general, especially her clothing type stuff. It's not my style at all. Granted, I don't wear women's clothes, but that's neither here nor there. But I looked at the product, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then my wife was with me, and she looked at it, and she's like, oh, it's Vera Wang. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. It doesn't – just because they slapped their name on it doesn't mean it's good or bad unless you like that person.
Yes.
You know, it's the same as Martha Stewart or, gosh, even, you know, one of my favorite steakhouses is The Palm. And they've, you know, in the last 2 years started to brand a lot of their stuff. And you can, you know, go to a store and buy Palm steak knives or Palm, you know, everything from little butter, you know, just the whole kit. And I will occasionally buy those parts because it says The Palm on it. Not because I think it's a good product necessarily, because it's made by whoever makes their stuff, but it says The Palm. I like The Palm. I'll buy it.
So you're as susceptible as anybody else.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, it's The Palm.
It's The Palm. All right, one last story.
My New York friends will understand.
I don't know what The Palm is. It's a casino in Vegas.
He's from the Midwest. Don't worry.
Yeah,
I know. No, they got a couple in the Midwest.
Last but not least, for my buddies over at Technology Tell, the BBC has broken my heart. The Doctor who is celebrating their 50th anniversary, is going 3D.
Boo.
Do I lose a geek card for having never seen an episode of Doctor Who?
Yes.
Yes.
I just,
or at least you go from gold to like 10.
Ooh.
Maybe you're not, you know, you don't lose the card completely, but you lose some of your luster. Hey, in all seriousness, I don't understand this move, except the fact the BBC does one thing well, and they do push technology. This summer in the Olympics, they broadcast a lot of events in 3D. My dislike of 3D aside, at least give them the props for pushing things forward and trying to get things out there. I probably would have wished that they would have broadcast it in 4K rather than 3D, but hey, you know, you can't split hairs. So apparently Doctor Who will be in 3D. So, yeah. All right. On that note, thanks so much for joining us. With us this week has been Mr. Matt Scott from Omega Audio Video in London, Ontario, Canada. How can people find you, sir?
You can find me on Twitter at Omega Audio Video or at Matt D. Scott, or on Facebook at either one of those, or online at OmegaAudioVideo.com.
Very cool. And also with us is the Midwest Area Sales Manager for Installed Sound at Sennheiser, my buddy, Michael Drainer. How can people find you, sir?
At Michael Drainer on Twitter. And please feel free to visit SennheiserUSA.com.
Because you can see the Anaconda.
Yes. Click on K-Array and look for the Anaconda.
Yeah, that is so cool. I like the K-Arrays in general, but that's just cool. My name is Tim Albright. If you'd like to follow me in the Twitter stuff, it is T-D Albright, A-L-B-R-I-G-H-T. But more importantly for me and everybody here at AV Nation, please go by the website. Matt's the one who did it, and he spent an awful lot of time on it. So check it out, if you will, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. From there, you can get to our Facebook, our Twitter, our G+, and all that other jazz. You can see, you can listen to this show as well as our monthlies. And as a programming note, we have a brand new show coming down the pike this week, focusing on the world of control in AV. Very excited about that. So avnation.tv. AVNation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. That's all the time we have for AV Week.